Hello, friends. This is your friend Kent C. Dodds, and I'm joined by my friend Peggy. Say hi, Peggy.
Hey, everyone. I'm so excited to be on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for joining us. So, Peggy, your last name is pronounced Razus.
Razus, yes. I've had people pronounce it many different ways. Racist, razor. Yeah, but it's, I know it's terrible. Razus is the correct pronunciation.
Yeah. Well, cool. I'm so happy to have you, Peggy. You and I have been, buddies since like, I don't know, for the last 3 years or more. Time flies.
Yeah. Something like that. I know. Right. Like it doesn't feel like it's been that long. I think the first time we met each other was like lunch in New York City with a bunch of New York City JavaScript people. It was a fun time.
Yeah. Good times. So, and I guess last we saw each other was at React Amsterdam. That was fun.
Yes, it was.
Good times. Cool. So, Peggy, you have been like, you know, as long as I have known you, you've been really interested in GraphQL. And now it's kind of your full-time thing is it revolves around, this GraphQL thing. So I'm excited to talk with you about that, and specifically Apollo and the cool things that, you're all doing there. But before we get into that, I think it'd be cool for people to get to know you a little bit. So if you could share with us, just whatever you want to, share about yourself, your technical interests, as well as your personal interests or whatever you want to share with us. Yeah, I'd love to get to know you a little bit.
Yeah, totally. So hey, everyone, my name is Peggy, and I am an engineering manager at Apollo, where I lead the developer experience team. So my role is kind of a very interesting mix of engineering, marketing, and product. I lead a team of developer advocates. We're actually hiring right now, so get in touch if you're interested. Also technical writers, docs, infrastructure engineers, and a designer. And it's a lot of fun. We pretty much our primary goal is to make sure that everyone is successful and happy and productive with GraphQL and Apollo. So in a given week, I could be, you know, speaking at a conference and interacting with developers in person. I could be, you know, suggesting a way to improve the documentation, perhaps, you know, with interactive components and even tutorials, and really just kind of listening to the feedback that our community members give us on Spectrum and Twitter and online. So it's a really, really fun job. I get to meet a lot of really interesting people, and I get to spread the good word about GraphQL, which I think is something that's pretty much revolutionizing how we're building apps today. So I'm super excited to talk with you about it.
Yeah, totally. So like, I had this workshop recently, build React.js applications, where I just take little, like we have a real worldy application, we build little parts of it as we go. And in preparing that, I wanted to go with GraphQL, but I got a lot of feedback from people that there are just so many people who are not in the wonderful world of GraphQL yet, that like the goal of the workshop was, let's learn React. But considering there are a lot of people who aren't familiar with GraphQL yet, if I use GraphQL, a lot of people felt like it would actually be a Learn GraphQL workshop because it's pretty fundamentally different from what a lot of people are experienced with. Is that a challenge that you find, like that it's a revolutionary change and it really is an amazing thing? But is it like, has it been a challenge for lots of companies to adopt? And if so, why or what makes it challenging?
Yeah, so I think there's definitely a learning curve with GraphQL. Like I'll totally give you that. There was even a learning curve for myself when I first started. I was in Major League Soccer and we were kind of converting everything over from REST to GraphQL. And it took me like a couple weeks to wrap my head around it. And I think it's because it's kind of like truly full stack, right? Like you have the client portion that you kind of have to understand, which if you have experience with React is, you know, you can wrap your head around it, but then also building the GraphQL layer itself. You know, you have to stand up a GraphQL server. You have to learn, you know, what is a schema? Like, how should I model my data? How do I write resolvers? Then if you're, you know, you're implementing in a production environment, you have to consider things like auth and caching, security, all of that. So like, when I teach it to people, we used to do the workshop, it was one day, but we've since expanded it to 2 days because it's just a lot to kind of fit it all in and get people really comfortable with running it. mm-hmm. production. That to say, like, I think the benefits are huge. The developer experience benefits are really kind of the ones that won me over from the start and the ones that keep continuing to get better and better. And we haven't really seen too much in terms of like pushback with adoption. There's lots of companies out there, Airbnb, Expedia, Audi, Ticketmaster, GitHub, like the list goes on and on, like everyone's starting to adopt it. But, you know, it definitely takes a lot. And I think you made the right call with your React workshop, not trying to cram in GraphQL too, because it could definitely get overwhelming for people that are just starting to learn React.
Yeah, it sounds like GraphQL is kind of it's such a revolutionary thing that it touches every side of development, all the way like really far back. In some cases, there are providers who even take care of the database side for you. Like you get very far in the back, and then all the way in the front as well, with like now you're doing state management and caching and all of that and authentication. And so it touches so many places that it can be a pretty impactful change. Like it's not something that you can iterate to super easily. And so finding that, that quick path to get something implemented so that you can iterate toward, you know, making the bigger impact, that can be a little bit of a challenge. One thing I want to ask you about is a couple of years ago, I was on I was running the JavaScript Air podcast, and we had Lee Byron, creator of GraphQL, on the show. And he mentioned something to me that I thought was kind of interesting. I want to get your take on it, was that you can actually implement GraphQL on the front end and have the entire thing just running in the front end. And like most of your code is treating it like a regular GraphQL server, but all your resolvers and everything are hitting the REST endpoints that you have today. Have you ever seen anybody do something like that? And does that, would that make sense as a maybe more iterative, like less impact, like less company-wide impactful way to start adopting GraphQL?
Yeah. So there's maybe like two ways you could approach this. I do think it like, you know, it is an interesting way to kind of get your feet wet, but not necessarily something that we would recommend most people doing in production. So the first way is you could literally run like a GraphQL server on the client. But the caveat with that is that like the GraphQL JS modules in order for like validation and all of that, they're extremely large and would inflate your bundle size. So that's kind of why we keep that complexity, on the server instead of on the client.
Right.
But I have seen actually teams like running GraphQL on like low memory devices actually include the server on the client side as a way to kind of just save like bytes over the wire, which I thought was kind of interesting. But the second way that you could do this would actually be with Apollo local state. So Apollo actually gives you the ability to specify client side resolvers. So in those resolvers, you can literally do whatever you want. You could hit a REST endpoint. You could query a device API. You could augment some server data with local state, for example. And that could also be a way for you to kind of get the hang of like, what is a resolver? How do I make queries, connect them to components, that sort of thing. And people do that extremely like successfully. Like I've seen, I think I was talking to someone who built like the Microsoft Teams app, and they've actually just completely ran like GraphQL on the client using Apollo local state. I know people at Sony do that as well. So yeah, it's definitely possible, but I do think you lose some of the benefits of GraphQL. For example, if you have multiple clients querying the same API, like it kind of makes sense to shift that to the server. So that way you're not duplicating code across your clients. You also lose some of the, you know, benefits with like smaller payloads, fewer round trips if you're doing it that way as well. But I think it just speaks to like the flexibility of GraphQL that you can kind of use it in all these very interesting ways. And I think, we're kind of only just scratching the surface on what you can do with it. And that's what really makes it such like an exciting space to work in, is it's so flexible. You can really mold it and shape it into however your organization needs it. Which is pretty cool.
Absolutely. I know when I was at PayPal, we wrote, at PayPal, you have the front end, and then there's this like middle tier sort of thing that that serves the front end. They kind of consider it the front end, but it's actually a node server that kind of hits the endpoints and stuff. And then we have a technical mid tier, and then we have like lower downstream C and Java services and stuff. And when we were trying to implement GraphQL, we just implemented it in our node layer, and the resolvers were all just hitting REST endpoints. But because it was running on the server, it was not like much worse than just hitting the regular REST endpoints and having one-off endpoints. In fact, it was much better. And so there, like, I agree with you. I think there are lots of different ways to implement this. And I think one of the struggles that I have witnessed in trying to get companies to implement GraphQL myself is the backend engineers are typically like, I'm pretty happy with REST. We have all of these frameworks already that I've been using for years. I know how to do RESTful stuff. And so it's been difficult to convince them, but if you can stand up like a node server that hits their endpoints, and then eventually they come around because they're like, oh, you mean I don't have to version my endpoints anymore? Or, oh, I don't have to, you know, make a one-off endpoint for every single little thing that you need. Yeah, that sounds great. They come around eventually, but.
Yeah, that's actually our recommended architecture, is really just like a layer over your existing endpoints. An Apollo server makes this pretty easy. We have this thing, it's called a REST data source, and it very easily hooks into the REST endpoints you already have. It even stands up a resource cache for you, so that way your backend engineers aren't worried about increased traffic or possibly taking down one of the endpoints. So yeah, I think that's a totally like valid path, and really kind of how we see most teams implementing GraphQL is like this layer in between their front end and their underlying services.
Is that mostly because like that's the golden architecture, or is there something about that? Like I would, my assumption would be that the best architecture would be the backend services are all written just with exposing GraphQL endpoints. And then you have multiple services, whatever, you compose those GraphQL endpoints and it's magic and it's awesome. Or is there something to be said for like downstream services, they expose just regular CRUD endpoints, and then we have like this thing in the middle to put it all together? Like, I'm mostly interested, why is that the recommended architecture?
Yeah, totally. So GraphQL native, kind of like GraphQL's native services. I think there's a lot of people doing really interesting stuff in this space right now, like a lot of the database providers like Prisma and Hasura. But we're kind of not really taking a stance on those. We're kind of more focusing on the GraphQL layer as opposed to GraphQL native services, because like you said, like a lot of backend teams like don't want to rewrite all their services to GraphQL. And if they do, they certainly don't want to use JavaScript. So that's kind of really what we see a lot of the times, but I definitely think there's still a place in the ecosystem for those. So as part of that kind of GraphQL layer, you touched upon this a little bit. What we really recommend is not like a monolithic GraphQL layer. We actually recommend that teams stand up a lot of, kind of take responsibility for their own domain schema. And that way they have multiple sub schemas that then they federate into a single layer. So we're actually like launching this. I don't know if I'm allowed to say exactly when, but like within the next couple of weeks, it's this essentially new programming model. It's on top of GraphQL. It's completely spec compliant, but it's just a really interesting way to essentially compose multiple sub schemas into a single graph where the execution is actually distributed. So, at PayPal, for example, I'm trying to think of like separate teams. Maybe one team has... what are some, I guess, schemas or teams at PayPal that had GraphQL services?
Yeah, so the merchant team has a lot of GraphQL stuff. So their payment methods, their credit card or bank or whatever, and then that you have your contacts on the consumer side where the people that I send money to regularly. So is that helpful?
Yeah, exactly. So maybe you have this like user query, for example, and you have like the contacts coming from one service, and you have like you know, the payment methods coming from one. I'm trying to think of a type where both of those would be combined. But like, for example, you want to just be able to seamlessly query the graph, and you don't want to have to think about like which services these queries are pulling mm-hmm. from. Like, you just want to write a query and have that data come back to you on the client. And that's kind of really what this the Federation solves, is implementing GraphQL specifically in a microservices architecture. So that way, it's opaque on the client. You know, you're just requesting the data that you want, and then the distributed execution will kind of take care of sending the parts of the query to the different services that request it.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's so that was something actually that we were trying to implement before I left. I wasn't super involved in the GraphQL stuff, but I was sort of involved. And that was something that was kind of the goal, was like every one of these services wanted to have some sort of wrapper that exposed a GraphQL endpoint for that. And then we'd have just one endpoint that was like paypal.com/GraphQL. You could just compose them all together in a beautiful way. I'm not sure how far they've gotten on that so far, but I like that idea a lot. That makes a lot of sense. So cool. So if I wanted to, I don't know, like one thing that might be useful, and I don't want to get too deep into this because there are about a million of these types of like lots of content on why GraphQL is so great, why we should stop using REST, all this. Maybe like a high level, why is it worth all of the trouble to go through this and make this pretty fundamental shift from our REST stuff to GraphQL?
Yeah, totally. So this was kind of the major thesis of my React Amsterdam talk, because I think when a lot of people talk like why GraphQL, they talk about some of the technical benefits. They say like, oh, you know, like it prevents overfetching and like fewer round trips and like smaller payloads. And while that's all like well and good, and I think that's great, and it's awesome that GraphQL gives us these benefits, the actual main benefit that you get from switching to GraphQL is really the developer experience. And I think, you know, with that comes increased productivity. Like, teams can ship products faster. They can, hire the best engineers to their teams. They can retain them once they're there because they're happy and they're productive. It's really just, I think, the amazing developer experience that it gives you. So some of the things that I kind of covered in my talk and the demos, because of GraphQL's like, static typing, it really like unlocks the door to a lot of really cool stuff. So we have like a VS Code extension, for example, and right inside your editor, as you're typing queries, you get autocomplete. You can peek inside your schema. You have, if you connect it to our cloud services, you have inline performance metrics of how long it takes each field to resolve right inside your editor, which is like pretty amazing, because if you're working with REST, for example, and you want to know, okay, like what data is available to me? What's the shape of my data? You're either like console logging, you're like opening up Postman, or you're like tapping the backend engineer on the shoulder and like asking them, like, you know, to just really have all of this like at our fingertips within our editor is truly like, to me, an amazing thing. That's one of them. Also, the integration with TypeScript, like I'm super passionate, I guess. I don't know. I think TypeScript is really the future. I think, you know, maybe for like smaller things, people say it could be overkill. And I think there's definitely a learning curve there. But in a production environment, like TypeScript is definitely the way to go. And the Apollo CLI, like it will literally read your schema and automatically output type definitions for you that change as you're writing your queries. So now, like, wow, you have fully typed React components automatically just by like running a single command, which is pretty dope. And then like the local state management experience to me is also something that's super cool, because like when you write your React components, they're made up of a lot of different types of data, right? Like you have some remote data coming from somewhere, you might have some local data, maybe like information about you know, the device, whether or not it's connected, information about, maybe you're building like an e-commerce app and you have products, whether or not they're in a cart, and being able to like seamlessly mix your remote and your local state in one query is pretty amazing. And even your local state will be like automatically typed. You'll have all the same benefits in your editor that you do with your remote data. So yeah, so I think like the developer experience to me is like the reason why you should do this. It's definitely a shift for a lot of organizations, but it's one that we've seen time and time again has just been paying dividends in the companies that have chosen to adopt it.
Yeah, it sounds so great. And so much of the stuff that I'm doing on a regular basis on my own is like, I'm trying to make a little, workshop app, and I don't want to bring in TypeScript or all of this other stuff, because then not only do they have to learn what we're talking about in the workshop, but also they have to learn TypeScript. And so I don't get to spend so much time in those technologies, and it makes me super envious to have those sweet editor plugins and things. But it sounds like a really awesome enhancement to your productivity. Eventually, we're just not going to code anymore, and the computers will just code for us because it's all so perfect. So, Peggy, one other question that I wanted to ask about is like, I think most of my audience are probably React developers, but I think a lot of people who follow me online are either React developers and something else, or maybe something else entirely. And I'm kind of curious. I talk a lot about React, and it's my love at the moment. But what about people who are not using React? Can they use Apollo or something like it with GraphQL to get some of these same benefits? And if that's the case, how is that change the story for them, whether they're using Vue or Angular or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the really cool thing about Apollo client is it's totally Vue layer agnostic. So the core Apollo client is just JavaScript. Like literally, even if you're not using any Vue layer whatsoever, you can still make queries and get all the same caching benefits. Hmm. On top of that are the Vue layer integration. So like React Apollo would be how you use Apollo client with React. We also have tons of community maintained Vue layer integrations. So Apollo Angular is awesome. I have not used Angular since Angular 1, so I can't say too much about the experience there, but the maintainer Camille has done a really excellent job kind of integrating Angular into the Apollo stack. And then also Vue Apollo as well is super popular. The maintainer of that, Guillaume, he's on the Vue core team, and he's done some just really amazing work with the Vue CLI UI, how you can kind of just create, I guess it's like a GUI for like a GUI for like creating Vue projects, but it has all these like really amazing integrations with that as well. And just the developer experience is phenomenal there. So I'm not an Angular or Vue developer, but I've just heard from so many people how it's helped their team. I know they use Vue Apollo at GitLab, for example. I think one of the engineers there, she just wrote a really great post on how they were able to completely do away with Vuex after switching to Apollo client and the local state management feature. So I think it's working just as well for Vue and Angular and vanilla JavaScript developers, just as well as it is for React developers. And I think it's really awesome that we've kind of been able to create something that, you know, every developer can take advantage of, not just the ones who are on like the trendy React stack or whatever.
Speaking of that trendy React stack, there are some really cool things that are like that have recently happened in React world and also are going to happen. Do you want to talk a little bit about React hooks with Apollo and then Suspense? My guess or my intuition is that sure, we can do some really cool things with React hooks. But once Suspense lands and is official, like, you know, blessed for data fetching, then that's when really cool things can start happening. But yeah, do you want to speak to that at all?
Yeah, totally. So we actually just released our beta of the new Hooks API for Apollo client like last week. So I haven't spent too much time with it yet. I literally just converted like my demo app to Hooks, and it was only like two hooks. But people tell me it's really great because the API was actually based on a community plugin that we had that became really popular. So we borrowed a lot of the ideas and kind of merged them into core. And it's just amazing. Like I think it's really going to solve the problem of like multiple mutations. So like we had a render prop API. Well, we still have a render prop API is still there. But in order to do like multiple mutations in a single component, you would start to have like, you know, the classic render prop pyramid of Doom. So now with hooks, you won't have that anymore, which I think will be really great. And people can kind of abstract away, you know, perhaps you have a complicated like login flow that has multiple mutations. Well, now you can like abstract that away into a hook, which I think is pretty dope. Mm. So I'm super excited about that. And I can't wait to get it in the community's hands and just, you know, see what everyone's going to build with it. I think that's going to be pretty transformative. And then suspense. So we've actually done like a couple of demos like with suspense and Apollo client, and it like works pretty well, actually. Uh-huh. We haven't like built anything officially into core. Actually, last week we had Apollo Day NYC, and Jared Palmer gave a really cool talk about suspense and Apollo client. He has like a demo that he shared. So for all intents and purposes, like it works, although, you know, I don't know like what changes the React team's going to have to suspense like a couple months from now. And that's kind of why we haven't built anything into the core, is like, mm-hmm. if the React team says it's not ready, then, you know, we don't want to build something and have people adopt it. And then like, it all has to change in a couple months. Like mm-hmm. we definitely want to make sure that like whatever APIs we're releasing are stable. So I'm excited about the possibilities, because now, you know, instead of handling your loading state from every hook, you can then, you know, just put those suspense boundaries in, and almost like error boundaries, just kind of handle them at, you know, in a more top level of the React tree. I think it's going to be great. I'm excited for all the new developments with server-side rendering and, you know, being able to stream and not having to do that double pass render like we do now. I think that's going to be really great for companies that use that, use server-side rendering. It'll definitely improve performance and user experience there. So I'm excited about the future, but, you know, obviously suspense, I think, is still kind of under wraps, and there's a lot of new developments there. So as soon as it comes out, like, we'll be ready. It just we're kind of like eagerly anticipating the release of that, just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely going to be just like hooks. It'll be another transformative improvement to the framework, and honestly remarkable that it's totally backward compatible and all that too. Pretty cool stuff. And I think that in particular with something like Apollo, it's very applicable and changing the way that you're going to be using things in a wonderful way. So so as we kind of come to the close of our time here, Peggy, I want to ask, what would, if somebody's sitting here and they're like, yeah, cool, I've heard about GraphQL, I want to give it a try, I love that DX, you know, developer experience stuff, what would you give them as some advice of how to get started using GraphQL in their application?
Yeah, so I think the first piece of advice that I give everybody is just to start small. Like literally take one endpoint in your application, maybe not a mission critical one, maybe mm-hmm. something super small, isolated feature, and just start with the schema. So think about the data that you're requesting from that endpoint on the client. Like, what kind of data do you need to expose? And that's the data that you'll start your schema out with. And don't worry about, I think a lot of teams like start with GraphQL and they want to like dump everything into their schema all at once. Don't do that. It should be totally demand driven, and only, you know, the fields that you're using should be what's represented in your schema. But start there. So you start with your schema, then next, like build your resolvers. We have the Apollo data source package that makes it really easy to kind of hook up a REST endpoint to your resolvers. You could start with that, or you could even just start with plain fetch. Like that's totally cool too. And then once you have your GraphQL server up and running, then just connect it to the front end, hopefully with Apollo, you know, integrate that use query hook and query that your new API and like just, you know, starting small with that one isolated feature and building it from the front end to the back end will kind of give you a taste of what it's like to work with GraphQL at all levels of the stack. And it'll allow you to evaluate whether or not it's truly for you. Some people, you know, I think most people, they kind of see it come full circle and they really like the light bulb clicks and they're like, okay, now I understand why this is so awesome. And we want to roll it out across our entire org. But yeah, just start small, one isolated feature, build out the back end first, then connect it to the front end. And yeah, hopefully from there, you'll want to connect a lot more endpoints. But I think just starting small and keeping it super scoped is how I would recommend most teams to get started.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, if there's something that like maybe somebody is worried about, often when we're learning new things, I find that it can be valuable to learn those things somewhere else, not in the product, so that I can make all my mistakes in a place that I can throw away. Are there any resources that you can give our listeners for how they can get started with GraphQL in a place that's not their product, so they can make all their mistakes first, and then take all their learnings to the product?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a tutorial in our docs. If you go to apollographql.com/docs, it's like the first one on the left-hand side. Yeah, that really just walks you through building a full stack app with Apollo. I will give a caveat that it's a bit beyond Hello World. So this is something that kind of is more, we built it in order to get people up to speed with, like, say they want to create a GraphQL POC at their company. This tutorial is going to give them the skills they need to do that. So it goes over things like authentication. It goes over pagination, local state management, queries, mutations, like pretty much, everything you need to know to get that first POC going. So it'll probably take you about 2 hours to complete it. But once you do, it kind of sets you up for success and teaches you the best practices and the things that you need to know to get going. Building more tutorials is something that my team's going to be working on in the next couple months. I really want to build a TypeScript tutorial. We've been getting requests for that one a lot. So expect to see kind of more developments in that space and more targeted tutorials as we start to build out the team. But for now, that one should kind of teach you everything you need to know to get started.
Very cool. Awesome. All right. So with that, I think that's pretty much it. So to wrap things up, Peggy, what is the best place for people to connect with you and keep up with what you are up to?
Yeah, definitely. Twitter is the best place. I'm pretty bad about answering my email. I'm at Peggy Raisis on Twitter. Just feel free. My DMs are open to DM me. Also, posting on Apollo Spectrum is a really great way to get answers because I get a lot of DMs and sometimes I can't get to all of them. So posting your question in the Apollo Spectrum channel is a really great way for community members to help you and hopefully, have a link that can be used by other members in the community who might have the same question. So definitely find me either on Twitter or find me there as well.
Perfect. All right. Thank you so much, Peggy, for all that you do. And thank you for giving us a half hour of your time. And with that, we will say goodbye. See ya.
See ya. Thanks for having me.